Welcome back to another edition of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Hobie Baker nominee, and more importantly, national champion, Jack Devine. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. You know, super happy to have you on. It's an honor to have you here. Man, again, first off, I want to congratulate you on the national championship. That was a hell of a game. You guys took down a hell of a team. You know, coming off the unbelievable season, Hobie Baker nominee. Man, talk to us about how crazy it's been these past couple weeks, kind of riding that high.
Yeah. Thank you. First off, thank you. And thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been pretty special the last couple weeks, being able to celebrate with my teammates, my family, some alumni. It's been a lot of fun. We know how special it was to go get a 10th national championship and what it meant to the program and the city. So for us, it's been enjoying the moment and then starting to look towards next season.
Yeah, you know, man, you bring up next season. You made the announcement a couple weeks ago that you were going to be returning to for your senior season. You know, what went into that decision? And looking at the teams, you guys lost a couple key pieces, right? You know, Rizzo decided to sign with Philly, and a couple other guys as well. For one, what went into that decision to return for, you know, your senior season? And do you think that the Pioneers have a legitimate chance next year to go back to back?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I think one thing was we lost four really key guys. Some of my best friends on the team, Tristan Burroughs, you said Massimo, Sean Behrens, and Shai Boum, they're tremendous players, and they played big roles in our national championship team this year. So they'll definitely be some missing pieces for next year. I think for myself, it was just figuring out what was best for myself and how to develop for myself, both as a player and a person. And I thought with meeting with the coaches, meeting with my family, meeting with teammates, I thought this was the best decision to stay. And I'm very excited about it. I think moving forward, looking on the next season, we definitely do have a lot of guys returning. I don't think we're going to have as many freshmen as we did this year. We had 11. We got a couple transfers coming in. So
yeah.
I think it's kind of doing a little similar routine to what we did last year, where we get the guys in the summer, the freshmen, maybe the transfers come in, and we just start to gel as a team in training camp. And we know it's going to be a long year next year as well as it was this year. But as long as we have those ups and downs and continue to improve, I think by the time you get to April, if you're really – really peaking at that moment, you always got a chance to go out there and win a national championship.
Yeah, you mentioned it's almost like a retool, right? You mentioned all the freshmen that you guys had. What would you say is the biggest, you know, like piece of success? Like what makes you guys have that ability to, you know, get so close? Yeah. Because again, you mentioned you had 11 freshmen, which is absolutely wild. And for you guys to be as good as you are, like, you know, what is it with the leadership? Is it a coaching thing?
Yeah.
Kind of what goes into that ability to gel so well?
Yeah, I think it's a culture here at the University of Denver. I think it's everything. You got the administrators, the AD's done a really good job, Josh Berlow. Our coaches are unbelievable with David Carl, Tavis, and Dallas Ferguson. They are unbelievable. And then I think as players, we really come together as a group. We play for one another, and we understand that it's not one player or one guy trying to get an award. It's at the end of the year, it's winning a national championship together. And I think when you have guys bought in and really focused on winning, I think that helps guys like the freshmen jump on board and understand what the culture is here.
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a guy like, you know, Dave Carl, who is super, super well respected throughout the entire hockey community. Uh-huh. You know, he's being talked about potentially getting NHL jobs somewhere down the road. You've obviously had the opportunity to play for him for a few seasons. What's it been like playing for Coach Carl? And what about Coach Carl specifically just makes him such a great coach, and that makes, you know, players like you want to play for him?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's an unbelievable coach. I think you've seen with the success, two national championships, four or five Frozen Fours. I mean, you got the USA jersey behind you.
Yep.
World Junior gold medal. He's a winner. And every day he's focused on getting better, and he's really dialed into the details. I think for a guy like me coming in here, it was how can I improve and develop? And I think I've gotten better every year, and that's a testament to our coaching staff and the trainers we have here. So honestly, with Coach Carl, he just he's just a tremendous coach and super smart, and he's so young already.
Right. That's the craziest part, man. Yeah. The dude's in his mid-30s, which is insane to think about, and he's incredibly successful already.
Crazy. Yeah, I think he's only 34 and he's accomplished that much already. It's pretty awesome to see him grow and to see his development, honestly, in the 3 years he's coached me.
Yeah, and man, to kind of caveat off that, it's pretty cool to see you guys. Obviously, you won your 10th national championship first one in a couple of years. But I want to go back to the Natty because it was one of the most epic games I've watched since I started covering college hockey. Man, your goalie, Matt Davis, is one of a kind. I mean, that dude, and even just after the game, just how genuine of a human being he was, right? The emotion that he had after that win. What kind of guy is Matty? And like, again, for the people that we really just started learning about him, right? Yeah. When, come national championship time, he's making ridiculous saves. What kind of guy is Matty on the ice and off the ice?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a great guy. I mean, I always say this, that his success, no one else deserves it more than him. He sat behind Magnus Krona for 2 years, stayed patient. And when his time came, he ran with it. Even this year, he got injured majority of the start. So I think he deserves it. He's an unbelievable guy. He's a guy you can really depend on and great guy in the locker room. And I think on the ice, you know what you're going to get from him. He's always going to give 100%. And I think for our team, we were really relaxed with him behind us, and we know how much preparation and hard work he had put in the last 3 years, honestly.
Yeah.
And I think he was ready to shine. And like I mentioned, he's an unbelievable man, comes from a great family, and I'm just so proud of what he's done, and couldn't happen to a better dude.
Man, and again, just to bring up, like, the at the end when they were asking, all the you could see just the emotion in his face, and just such a likable person.
Yeah.
And man, that save on Ryan Leonard, I mean, that was one of the best saves I've ever seen, in my entire life.
Yeah, that was incredible. I mean, even at the start, he got a big save on Will Smith, I think 5 minutes in. Even the game before, Celebrini got a breakaway like a minute in. I think he was always dialed from the first minute, and I mean, that save was you heard the call. This man's
insane. My god, dude.
It's pretty hilarious, but it was an unbelievable save and probably the best save I've ever seen.
Yeah, 100%. And kind of talking about that game too, like obviously we just talked about Coach Carl. Yeah. What would you say was the biggest, success that you guys had in stopping those guys? You mentioned guys like Cutter Gauthier, Lenny, Will Smith, and you guys were able to shut them down. And I think would you say that's a testament of just your style of play and the systems that Coach Carl has run all season?
Yeah, I think for us, we obviously knew how extremely talented they were as a team, up and down their lineup. They had great guys on their forward group with, as you mentioned, all three of those guys, Perreault also.
Perreault, I forgot about.
Really skilled. They even had great guys on the back end, Hrazchuk. So then we knew Fowler was unbelievable. So I think going in, we knew they were a good team, but I think we had beat them earlier in the year and we beat them in their home rink in Conte Forum. So I think we had a lot of momentum and confidence going into that game. Like, we knew we were a little bit of underdogs, but we never felt like that either game. And we knew how good of a team we were. And I think, kind of as you said, like, just sticking to our game, we didn't try to do anything too differently. We knew how good of a team we were, and we deserved to be in that game. So I think it's like we went out there and executed our game plan perfectly, and at the end of the day, we won 2-0. So, I think it was just playing our game and not trying to do anything out of the ordinary.
Yeah, another. I mean, I was gonna bring up too with the post game speech with Matt. Another epic post game speech, Ziv Buyum. I mean, man, I was laughing so hard live on TV. And him and you could tell as soon as he said it, his brother just was like, fuck, dude. Like, and man, what is it like having those two guys? They just seem like, such characters and such good guys. Like, do they ever battle it out in the locker room, like chirp each other a lot?
I don't know if they chirp each other too much. I think they definitely shy. The big brother always got the little brother's back. It's pretty special to see something like that. Two brothers on a national championship team, and
insane
how big of a role they played. I mean, Shai was unbelievable, and Z, for his age, that Spinarama pass in the national championship game was one of the best passes I've seen. So it was pretty cool to have him on our team. We're definitely going to miss Shai next year, but I'm excited to see Zeev's game grow. And he's only so young, so just grow as both a person and a player, because he's got a really, really bright future ahead of him.
Yeah, he played unbelievable this season. So fun to watch. But man, you yourself, unbelievable season. I mean, in just looking at your stats, right, from the past 3 years, you've significantly improved each year, which is, you know, obviously what you want to do as a player. Yeah. But this season, man, 44 games, 27 goals, 22 assists, 56 points. Yeah. What would you say was the biggest contributing factor to having such a like unreal season? I know you and Massimo have, you know, such good chemistry. But what would you say was, you know, other contributing factors into your success this season?
Yeah, I think at the end of my sophomore year, I really built some momentum for myself and kind of established myself where, hey, I can go out here, I can play, I can be a big difference maker. And going into that last summer, it was, how can I get bigger? How can I get stronger? How can I keep improving areas of my game? And I thought I had a really good summer with our trainer, Matt Shaw, here, and some of my personal development, shooting pucks, just getting any extra time I can. So I thought heading into training camp, I was in a really good spot. And fortunately, I was able to play with a really good player like Massimo, who's got tremendous hockey sense and one of the best passers I've ever played with. So I think for me, it was building chemistry off the start. And then right at game one, we hit the ground running and were able to execute right away. So I think a testament to my teammates who set me up and put me in the right position. And as you can see with how talented a roster you were, I was just able to execute in some good moments. And at the end of the year, we were able to come together as a team and win the national championship.
Yeah, you know, and it just seems that you and Massimo just have such a good relationship. I had him on the podcast. It was like mid-season, like right before he got hurt. Yeah. And same thing, man. Like he had such high praise for you and just nothing but good things to say. And he just seems like you guys kind of feed off each other and have that great chemistry.
Yeah, for sure. I think it helps when with your line mates, when you have a good relationship off the ice and you know, 100%. You're friends and care about each other, because that's only going to correlate on the ice. And yeah. I think for us, it was building that chemistry and drills and relying on each other and knowing where each other are. So when you get into games, it's just a lot easier.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, earlier in your career before Denver, you played in the National Development Program.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're seeing some of the kids that are coming out of there now, even, you know, when you were there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, what did that program do for your development? And again, like, what do you kind of owe that program? You're seeing tons of different kids from all over the place kind of choose the National Development Program. What's so special about that program?
Yeah, it's a tremendous place, and it's a place where I owe a lot of my development to. For the ages, like your 16-17 year, like when you're 16, 17 years old, it's the best place to develop. You're not going to get that level of training, that level of coaching, that much ice time.
Right.
It's tremendous. You come in, I came there as a 15-year-old, and I grew so much until I was 17 and got out of there. They do such a good job helping kids with schooling and working out. I mean, we're lifting 2 to 3 times a week, every week. And I think kind of similar to here, you kind of gel as a group and you work towards that collective goal of winning a gold medal. And, I mean, even now I watched that game, I want to say it was either yesterday on Sunday. Yeah. I mean, it was tough to watch. I mean, they were right there, but there's a lot of pride that goes into being there. And, it's a pretty special feeling when every day you're going to the rink and wearing that USA jersey.
Yeah, man. And like I said, all the talented kids that come out of there, they're becoming better and better every year, it seems. Yeah. 2022, man, you were the 221st pick, seventh round, taken by the Florida Panthers, who, you know, coincidentally are playing the Boston Bruins right now. You know, man, take us through what you remember that day. You know, your feeling going into the draft, or did you have any bizarre draft questions? And then was it kind of Florida all the way that you kind of had a good feeling about, or were there some other teams that you kind of felt good about?
I think I'll first start off with any bizarre questions. I don't remember any too much. I think one that was kind of, I was at the NHL combine, so one that was kind of there was just like, if you were an animal, which one would you be and why?
Yeah.
That was what a couple guys got. I think that was probably the weirdest one I got. Honestly, that was a couple years ago, so I don't really remember.
What kind of animal are you on the ice?
I don't even remember what I said to you. I think a couple of people just said like, I'm a lion because I'm always hungry, something like that. Just try to relate it as much as you can to hockey and life.
The funniest one, man, I had Zach Benson on like pretty early, and he was like, yeah, man, like I panicked and I said I was a golden retriever. And I was like, that's hilarious, dude. Like, I don't even know what I would, I don't even know how I'd react.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Like, you think you prepare enough and then they hit you with a curveball.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. So I think the questions, I don't really remember because it was 2 to 3 years ago now, so it's not as bright, but I think that was one where it kind of caught me off guard. I had to take a second to be like, well, what I'm going to say. I think draft day was pretty special for me. I was in Montreal with my family and my two sisters, and I think just when I heard my name, no matter what pick it was, I was excited and honored to be drafted by an organization like Florida. Just going down there, meeting all the staff was really cool and special, and that's something you dream of as a kid.
Yeah, dude, 100%. And I should have asked this earlier when we were talking about UD. Obviously, you're from Illinois, Glencoe. I hope I'm saying that right. Man, what led to the decision to go to Denver? Like, were there other schools that you were like heavily involved with? And then, like, what was it about Denver? You had mentioned the culture, the administration. Yeah. The coaches, but like, what about the school itself makes it so special?
Yeah, I mean, it was honestly a while ago, and I'm my senior year now. I think I was committed before I even started playing for the development team. So it was a long time ago. But one thing I really remember was just the coaching staff, and I'm so fortunate because I made the right decision when I was pretty young. But just I really felt they were personable, and I really felt like they had the best interest in mind for me. I felt like our conversation was honest when I was at that age. Like, they could have bullshitted a little bit or given me a lot, but they told it straight up, and I could really tell they were genuine and they wanted what's best for me and my development. And so that was really what kind of led me here, because I could tell how awesome the coaching staff was. And I was actually at the 2017 National Championship game when they beat Duluth. And
another epic game.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable game. And I mean, how could you not fall in love with the team who won the national championship right in front of your eyes? So also the winning culture. I saw that. I was like, wow, this is incredible. How can I not want to go here and try to win one of my own? And a couple of years later, I've got two of them. So it's pretty surreal, and it's kind of been a full circle moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, it looks like you made the right call there.
Yeah.
This past off season, you got to attend the Florida Panthers development camp. A lot of the guys that I've talked to from different organizations say that week is huge for their development. Just especially not only on the ice but off the ice stuff as well. What was your biggest takeaway from that week? Because again, it's not just on ice stuff, it's not just on ice drills, you're also doing stuff with nutrition, meeting the staff. Like, what was your biggest takeaway from that week?
Yeah, I think it's really quick. So each day you're just trying to get as much information as you can. And realistically, you're only going to take one or two takeaways from each day. I think, as you mentioned, the first big thing is just meeting everyone. You're meeting some of the other prospects. You're meeting the coaches. You're meeting the scouts. I think that's really big. And you kind of get to build that initial relationship. And I've met a couple of good guys at training camp where I even stay in touch with right now that play in the OHL or play overseas. So it's pretty cool that you get to build these relationships, even though it's quick. Hopefully these are your teammates in the future, and you get to know them really well. I would say just on ice, it's you're able to do a couple of drills and take some key things away. Like, I think for us, one thing they stressed was puck protection. And that's a big part of my game, big part of her game at University of Denver. So I think just a little takeaways I could do with that. And then fortunately, they have some high quality trainers there. So you kind of do your testing and they see what you can improve on a little bit. And you take that with you. You talk to, like, I would go talk to then my trainer at the university here and see what he thinks, and then kind of adjust my program a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Again, you guys are in the off season now. Mm-hmm. And even you coming off the season that you had, how successful you are, pure goal scorer. Yeah. What are some areas of your game that like you really kind of want to focus on going into your senior season?
Yeah, like I understand I'm at a big point in my career. I'm 20 right now and I'm going to be 21 in 6 months. I think for me, it's a big opportunity for me to really grow into my body and put on 5 to 10 pounds, just get stronger. And I think with that allows me to it allows me to get stronger and improve my skating a little bit. I think for one thing is I've really gotten some good top end speed over the last couple of years and continue to develop that way. But I think my first couple strides can continue to improve. And I think if I do that, I can build more time and space for myself.
Yeah.
So that's be something to do. And I think there's, you can always get better. I think hockey sense and my passing ability is something I think is one of my best qualities. So I can continue to work on that in the offseason, continue work on my shot. There's not one necessarily area, but I think as long as you keep tweaking and getting better at those areas, I'll have success again next season.
Well, that's well said, man. Again, I mentioned you guys are in the off season. What kind of things you do in the off season? You a golf guy? What kind of things you do in the off season?
Can you say that again? It's kind of just like,
oh, can you hear?
Sorry.
Can you hear me okay? Did I lose
you? Yeah, I was just like a little shaky.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You can hear me all right?
Yeah, I'm good now. I just couldn't hear the question.
So you're obviously in the off season. You know, what kind of things do you enjoy doing in the off season? Are you a golf guy? You know, what kind of things are you enjoying with your time off?
Yeah, for sure. I think right now we're just lifting a lot and I'm still in school for a couple weeks. So that takes a lot of your time up with classes. But once I'm out of classes, definitely golfing. I like golfing. When I'm back home in Chicago, I live right by the lake. So jump in there with some buddies from back home. But while I'm here in school, it's definitely lifting, skating a bit, and then just hanging out with the guys. It's a lot of time in season. You're at the rink spending time with them. So it's nice to get away and do some fun things like them. Like we'll go to Rockies games around here. We went to the Avs game, got celebrated there. So it's kind of hard with how expensive the tickets are right now.
Yeah.
But definitely Rockies games. There's some fun things to do around here.
It's a beautiful area too, man. I remember traveling to the Academy, the Air Force Academy. It's such a beautiful area. Man, last thing, man, I was reading your player profile on the Denver website, and it says you're a big office guy. Pretty recently, man, I've been getting into it with people on Twitter saying that Big Bang Theory is better than The Office, which I think is absolutely nauseating. Man, who's your favorite character on The Office? I got to know.
My favorite character on The Office is probably Kevin. I love Kevin. I think he's hilarious.
Bingo.
I love how they make him kind of a genius on the side. Like if you see some of like the extended episodes, he's like, I think one of them was like he can do like – can't do a normal math equation, but you put pies in and you can do any math equation.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. So I like Kevin. And I like obviously Jim and Dwight when they're doing the prank stuff like that. I don't think it's the most necessarily exciting TV show, but it's something you can always put on. I think I've watched it 4 or 5 times. It always keeps you coming back for more.
Yeah, man. I had posted something on The Office. I can't even remember what it was. It was a clip or something. Man, I had people coming at me being like, shitty show. Like watch Big Bang Theory. I'm like, man, I can't watch Big Bang Theory without but yeah, Kevin's a beauty. And I think it's so funny just seeing him like do interviews and stuff like outside of like The Office, like how normal he is. But listen, man. Yeah. We're coming up on, you know, almost, you know, 23 minutes here. I can't thank you enough for, you know, taking the time.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
Yeah, brother.
What's your flag there in the background? Did you serve
this? This one?
Yeah, right there. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So I actually was in the Air Force from 2014 to 2021. I got medically retired. And that's how I kind of started doing this whole thing. I kind of was down in the dumps and started watching hockey again. I was a big, you know, played hockey growing up all through high school, year junior. And that's why I do this. I love talking to you guys, and you guys make this, you know, literally just hearing your guys' stories are makes it worth it.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I appreciate your service. I know how much the troops mean for a country and how much they allow our freedom. So I appreciate you for your service. That's awesome.
Jack, I appreciate that, man. That, you know, again, you're such a stand-up kid, hell of a leader, hell of a player on the ice, but even better person off the ice. And honestly, man, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your schedule. I understand how busy you are. So, again, congrats on the natty, my friend. And I can't wait to see what you do next year.
Yeah, appreciate it. Good luck to you too in the future. Appreciate it. And hopefully maybe we'll see you around after next season.
Sounds good, man. Take care.
Yep. See you, Chris.
Take care. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Jack Devine, forward for University of Denver. national championship, Hobie Baker finalist. Unbelievable kid. Can't thank him enough for being here and doing that interview with us. He's a hell of a kid. Has a ton of potential, ton of talent. One of the most gifted goal scorers in hockey. So we greatly appreciate him and, you know, him taking his taking the time out of his schedule to come on Drop the Mitts. Right now we are recording. It is 10:58 on Wednesday. The conclusion of the Bruins-Panthers game. Man, this was a wild one. 6-1 loss to the Bruins. Panthers take it at home. Take game two. And my God, was this game a bloodbath. You know, just to kind of give a little rundown, Alexander Barkov scored 2 goals. He also had 2 apples. And again, just looking at this, the stat line, 33 shots for Florida, 15 for Boston. But I think the biggest story here is Jeremy Swayman gets pulled from the net. My initial reaction was, again, this game is no indication on the play of Jeremy Swayman. I think this is solely the embarrassing play from the players in front of him. He deserved much better in this game. And you know what? The way that I look at this is it gives the opportunity for Sway to get a little rest for that whole third period and get ready for game two. I mean, this game just from start to finish, Boston came out hot, couple big hits from Captain Brad Marchand, you know, setting the tone early. He had a huge hit on Matthew Tkachuk, another big hit on a guy like Aaron Ekblad. And it seemed like they had all the momentum. Charlie Coyle scored on a beautiful play, phenomenal forecheck, you know, balls to the wall, forced Brandon Montour up the right boards. Brad Marchand collapsed on him, forced a turnover. Pavel Zacha was able to give it to Brad Marchand, who ultimately gave it to Charlie Coyle for the first goal. It was a beauty of a goal. Well-executed play to a T. It's how you draw it up, how you draw the forecheck up. Paul Maurice made very similarly to how Jim Montgomery did in game one, where he called that timeout. It turned the tides of the game. And what Paul Maurice did was about little towards the end of the first, made some significant line changes. He put Carter Verhaeghe with Matthew Tkachuk and Anton Lundell and Sam Reinhart back with Alex Barkov. And after he made this move, it just seemed like they got a sudden jolt. Granted, it was towards the end of the first, so the first concluded. And the Florida Panthers came out in the second period just absolutely buzzing, you know. They scored 1 minute and 56 seconds into the second on a complete blunder play by Derek Forbert. I don't know what the hell this dude was doing. It looked like from the looks of it, it looked like he was thinking the puck was going to be wrapped back around, but that's not what happened. The puck was forced back up the boards, leaving Steven Lorenz wide open in front of Jeremy Swayman, like literally completely alone. Obviously, Brandon Montour gets a shot off, and Steven Lorenz is able to deflect the shot. Again, completely alone in front of Swayman. And just, again, throughout that period, just blunder after blunder, turnover after turnover. You know, Alex Barkov scoring with, you know, at 9:49 in the second with a nice wrist shot. Again, just a complete blunder by Charlie McAvoy. Had no stick. He just didn't seem like himself tonight. I think, and just in looking at Bruins Twitter, the vast majority of people agree with this. I mean, he just did not look like himself. And like, I don't know if this is injury related or what it may be. He did not look like himself. That's the fact of the matter. Again, I don't know if he's battling injury. I don't know what is going on with Charlie, but he did not look like himself tonight. And I would go as far to say that he was a liability out there. And again, who I don't know if he's battling injury. He just did not look like himself. And then to close out with 2 seconds left in the second period, Gustav Forsling gets a slap shot off and beats Jeremy Swayman. So we're looking at a 3-1, you know, 3-1 game going into the third. And I had tweeted out that, you know, the fellas need to, Jeremy Swayman deserves better, more heart, more grit in front of the net, just being overall more responsible in their own zone. They owed that to Swayman. And boy, was I wrong. Again, they come out in the third, 128 into the third, and E2 Luostarinen got a shot off and, you know, beat Swayman again. And then, you know, obviously to close out the game, Barkov scored again and Brandon Montour. Funny enough, after the Brandon Montour goal, there a scrum ensued. And you know what? I'm happy Brad Marchand actually went back at Montour. Montour had scored the goal, another blunder in front of the net. Brandon Carlo, you know, blows a tire. And Montour's in front of the net with Marchand right there. And just as soon as he scores the goal, starts barking at Marchand. And again, you could tell that just the frustration boiled over. And they ended up going. There was a scrap and hilarious on Brandon Montour sticking his tongue out at Marchand. You know, going back to the licking incident. And funny enough, like, Ryan Callahan was the, you know, one of the play-by-play guys. So it just made it all the more funny. And from that moment, just a complete bloodbath. I mean, 10-minute misconduct after 10-minute misconduct after 10-minute misconducts. They were handing them out like fucking candy. And I think most notably out of all these scrums, because there was a shit ton of them. And you know what? Boston didn't roll over, you know, being down by 5. But most notably, David Pastrnak going with Matthew Tkachuk. They dropped the mitts and they went. And you know what? I was watching the whole thing kind of unravel. And Pasta and Tkachuk were kind of barking at each other, going back and forth towards the penalty box, kind of led to the bench. At the bench, they were kind of going back and forth with each other. And finally, Pasta turned to head coach Jim Montgomery and essentially asked if he could go with him. And Monty, by the looks of it, was asking him, like, is that what you want to do? You want to go with him? And Pasta said yes. And again, they come off the bench and Pasta and Tkachuk go. And you know what? That's a huge thing for me. Like, that's, I don't think a lot of people realize what kind of leadership move that is, because on what planet does David Pastrnak want to fight a guy like Matthew Tkachuk? Matthew Tkachuk is a guy that can chuck him. He can throw some bombs, and you know, David Pastrnak stepped up, and I thought it was absolute chicken shit when Pasta goes down on the ice and Matthew Tkachuk decides that he wants to get 2 more shots on him. I've been going back and forth with these morons on Twitter, and it's like, well, what about the punches, you know, with the ref involved, almost hitting the ref? And it's like, well, listen, it's kind of like a domino effect. I don't think Pasta's throwing those punches unless he's getting punched by Tkachuk. Pasta was already down and out. Like, the fight was over. And Tkachuk decided while he was down, he wanted to give 2 more punches to the head. So, yeah, absolutely, I would toss him back. And again, I think that was a huge leadership moment for Pasta, because, you know what, we talk about, he's a guy that a lot of people question why he's wearing the A. And is he actually a leader? Is it because of his skill set? Is it because he's just a morale guy, a funny guy, you know, whatever? But, like, this was a legitimate leadership moment for David Pastrnak. I think this is going to obviously be talked about all day tomorrow when this drops on May 9th. And for me, that is one of the things that really, really kind of popped out to me, is just his willingness to go with one of their tough guys, because Matthew Tkachuk is a tough bastard. Let's not stray away from that. I mean, that dude as much as we shit on him for his rat-like behavior, you know, similarly to Marchand, he's a guy that, again, he's not afraid to play on the edge, and he can also put the puck in the net and create offense, and he's a good player, you know, but for a guy like David Pastrnak to, you know, step up like that, that's huge. Series is coming back to Boston, tied 1-1, brand new series. There's not a shadow of a doubt that this game is going to be a bloodbath. I mean, I can tell you right now for certain that Matthew Tkachuk is going to have to answer for those punches that he threw on David Pastrnak while on the ice. I can absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, tell you he is going to answer for those. The other thing that I noticed was what was said between Pat Maroon and Nick Cousins. We kind of saw the tail end of it, in which Pat Maroon was given game misconduct. And he really didn't say a whole lot as he was skating off. He kind of was just staring at Nick Cousins. So it makes me wonder what was said before that. And obviously the ESPN, we didn't really see that at, you know, we didn't get to see how that kind of unraveled. So I'd be curious. I'm curious to see what comes of that. What actually happened, because again, a guy like Pat Maroon, who's been here, he's done that, won his Stanley Cups, like, you don't just piss off a guy like that. There was something that happened that insinuated that made Pat Maroon go at him like that. And another thing that kind of popped out to me was Trent Frederick. There, you know, a little bit of a line brawl, face off in the offensive zone in their offensive zone, and Freddie kind of looks behind at all his guys, right? And kind of just something I had noticed is just this little look that he gave them, just like, hey, it's time, like, we're doing this. And sure shit, like, everyone off the draw, the whistle blows. You know, Brazo was in there, Trent Frederick was in there, you know, just mucking it up. And honestly, for a team that just lost 6-1, that kind of response is encouraging that they didn't just roll over. And yes, you know what? Did they roll over as far as the score goes? 100%. I mean, Florida absolutely waxed them tonight. They did not deserve, if we're talking X's and O's, yes, Florida absolutely deserved to win this game. The defensive zone turnovers, the too many men penalties. Jesus Christ, if we're talking five too many men penalties just in the playoffs. Those are mental blunders at that point. I mean, that's a kind way to put it. They're mental blunders. Putting yourself in position, now you're on a penalty kill, giving a team like Florida the opportunity with the man up to score. And that's exactly what they did. Again, just insane. But that was encouraging, just their response, you know, to kind of show Florida that we're, you know, we're not going to bow down to you guys, and we're not going to just, you know, bend over and take it. Like, that's not what's going to happen here. And it really was encouraging. It really was encouraging to see, and I'm excited for this game three. It's going to be a bloodbath. I know, again, the conversation is going to be tomorrow on, Jesus, all these radio stations, Twitter, all Mark or Swayman. And for me, it's not even a conversation. It's not even a conversation. You go Jeremy Swayman game three. It's not even a conversation. I don't even know why it's even going to be out there. I mean, Jeremy Swayman has bailed out this team more times than not. And again, I think this game specifically was just the embarrassing, the just lack of focus, the lack of execution by the team in front of him. And you know what? I could tell from the moment that Monty pulled him when he rushed over to meet Swayman and kind of looked like he was giving him words of encouragement. That tells me, like, they're going to go Swayman game three, and it's the right move. And you know what? If Swayman struggles again in game three, you have that luxury to play Linus Allmark at home in a game four situation. Again, he just played. He's not cold. He just played the third period of a game. He's not by any means cold. If that happens, if they go down, if they lose game three, then yeah, maybe we talk about putting Linus Allmark in. But for, you know, just this game is one of those, it's a wash. Again, I'm looking at all these misconducts, Pat Maroon misconduct, Nick Cousins misconduct, Kulikov misconduct, Luostarinen misconduct, Brazo misconduct, Freddie misconduct, JVR misconduct, Mikola misconduct, Marchand, McAvoy, Sam Reinhart, Matthew Tkachuk, David Pastrnak, all misconducts, all tossed out. And that, listen, that was playoff hockey. That was, these teams do not like each other. That is clear, especially after last year. You know, so I, for me, go back to Jeremy Swayman, get back to the basics. Again, they came out hard. They were playing good hockey, executing on the forecheck, getting good opportunities. Charlie Coyle hit a post. Could have been a 3-1 hockey game after that, after the first. Could have been. Granted, if they had gotten some bounces to go their way, but it wasn't. That's the reality of it. So again, not to overthink it, but that's the breakdown of game two. I mean, geez. Bloodbath, just overall rough game for the Boston Bruins. Great win by the Florida Panthers. Great coaching adjustments by Paul Maurice. And we're on to game three. So moving on, another topic I'm really excited about is the NHL draft lottery, which happened last night at 6:30. It was unbelievable. It was awesome. It was kind of cool to see, you know, Macklin Celebrini had joined John Buchagross, which was really cool to see. Just kind of talking through his season. Just talking about the possible destinations, talking about, you know, some of the phenomenal plays that he made this season at BU. And again, it looks like he's going to be a San Jose Shark. San Jose wins the lottery. The NHL draft order stayed the exact same. So there were no changes within the top 16. The first time this has happened since 2010, which is pretty cool to see. I mean, 2010, you know, 14 years ago, that's kind of cool. But the draft order rounds out. San Jose gets the number one overall pick, followed by the Chicago Blackhawks. Number three to the Anaheim Ducks. Four, Columbus Blue Jackets. Five, Montreal Canadiens. Six, Utah. Seven, Ottawa Senators, eight, Seattle Kraken, nine, Calgary Flames, 10, New Jersey Devils, 11, Buffalo Sabres, 12, Philadelphia Flyers, 13, Minnesota Wild, 14, San Jose Sharks, 15, Detroit Red Wings, and 16, St. Louis Blues. So again, the order stayed the exact same. I'm super excited about this. I've already started doing some, you know, some mock drafts and whatnot. There's so many different things that could happen in this, but I think the one sure thing is that Macklin Celebrini is going to be a San Jose Shark, which is great for this organization. I said it yesterday. I give Mike Greer a lot of credit on this rebuild. He inherited an absolute dumpster fire. Mike Greer is a phenomenal hockey mind. He knows what he's doing. He's been very meticulous with this rebuild. He's brought in some really good prospects. You know, most notably Will Smith of Boston College, who again could have been a Hobey Baker finalist. Just had an unbelievable season at BC. Was selected fourth overall last year by the San Jose Sharks. The question is posed, you know, now that they got Celebrini, essentially, granted that's what we assume is gonna happen. Does Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini return to school? There was a report today by a good friend of ours, Jimmy Murphy, of the Sick Podcast. I'll actually get his handle right now because he's got some really good content that I love to follow. He's got a podcast with Pierre Maguire, who's another good friend of the pod. but it's the Sick Podcast, the Eye Test. You can follow them at SickPodNHL. But he had an interesting take today, and he had responded to one of my tweets where I was really excited about the San Jose Sharks rebuild. And he kind of put it into perspective for me. It's like by saying, you know, what happens if they don't join the team? What happens if they don't sign? You know, like, and again, I hadn't even thought about that perspective, and I kind of just assumed that they would. Now, if Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith decide to go back to school, the Hockey East is going to be absolutely incredible next year, even though it was last year. I mean, last season was insane to see a 17-year-old dominate college hockey, the freshman line at BC in Gabe Perreault, Ryan Leonard, Will Smith, the play of Cutter Gauthier. And again, to go down the list, we can talk about the Nadeau brothers at Maine. Again, just loaded with young talent. And to even think about, you know, Macklin Celebrini going back to school with Boston University adding guys like Cole Hudson, Cole Iserman, Kamil Bednarik, and you get to keep Macklin Celebrini. I mean, then we can flip it over to the BC side. If Will Smith decides to go back to school, you've got Ryan Leonard. You assume Gabe Perreault is going to go back at, you know, back to school. For me, Gabe Perreault is a hell of a player. I think he could benefit from one more year at school, potentially two. Again, that's not to say that he is not a great player, because he is a phenomenal player. And you know, having Will Smith go back there, now BC's adding a couple guys that are, you know, phenomenal talents. James Haggins, who potentially is going to be, not potentially, I'd say it's a pretty safe bet that he's going to be the number one overall selection in 2025 NHL draft. Absolutely dominated the worlds, broke Nikita Kucherov's point records for a single tournament. Just again, unbelievable talent. The way he creates offense, he's a three zone player. Just a phenomenal talent. And then a guy like Teddy Stiga, who has had an incredible season with the National Development Program, had a great tournament, in the worlds. And he's been climbing up draft boards all year. I mean, just his play. He's had an incredible year, and he's going to be at Boston College as well. So again, college hockey as a whole, but especially the Hockey East, is going to be absolutely insane. And I'm really excited for it. This draft is going to be really special. There's so many things that could happen. There's so many different moving parts. You know, like, what does Chicago do at two? Do they take a guy like Ivan Demidov? Do they potentially move down to grab a defenseman to solidify that D-core? Listen, this defenseman class is phenomenal. You've got guys that can go from 5 to probably 10 that are all defensemen that could slot in that role. You know, most notably, I've been talking very highly of Artem Levchinov. Of Michigan State. He had an incredible freshman season. Got the opportunity to watch him against BC at the Conti Forum. And he looked great. I mean, again, he's a kid, 18 years old. He just moves the puck really well. He would be a hard pass up for me, especially if they're trying to bolster that D-core. They've already got great pieces. Kevin Korchinski, Alex Vlasic, Del Mastro's nasty. They still have a guy like Seth Jones. But again, a guy like Artem Levchinov, phenomenal skater, sees the ice really well, but also is very responsible in his own zone. Again, for me, it really depends. And then after that, there's, you know, guy like Sam Dickinson, who's going to be nasty. I've loved his game. He's a London Knights kid. Again, he just stood out on that team as one of their best players. Especially, he's got a hell of a shot. Skates really well. again, Ziv Booyam, who we just interviewed his teammate, Jack Devine, had phenomenal things to say about Ziv Booyam. Just an absolute beauty in the locker room. And then again, on the ice, his game speaks for itself. A lot of the scouts are saying that he needs work in his own zone. But again, that's something that can be, you know, course corrected another year, potentially in the NCAA, maybe two. Those are things that, you know, are going to get course corrected. The way that he sees the ice, his hockey IQ, the way that he can create offense from the back end makes him a top 10 talent in my mind. And I fully anticipate that he's going to be a top 10 pick. I think he'd be a great fit on a team like Seattle at 8. We know Ottawa needs defensemen right now. They could benefit from adding a guy like Ziv Booyam. But that's remains to be seen. Another guy, Anton Seliev, big boy. He's a monster defenseman, 6'7". And again, he's another guy that could crack the top 10. Another guy, Zane Parikh. I hope I'm saying his name right. I will definitely get to know it as, you know, as the mock draft process goes on, as we get closer. We actually will be traveling to the draft, which is super exciting. So again, we're going to be doing mock drafts up until June. So we're really excited about, you know, the lottery, the draft being held at the Sphere, which again, Gary Bettman yesterday described as cutting edge technology. And again, one of the last drafts that everyone is going to be together, you know, all the staffs, all the, you know, all the management, everything. It's going to be more so, like the NFL, is what I understand. So I'm definitely happy I'll be able to catch that. So yeah, that wraps up this week's episode, episode 41 of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast. Again, I can't thank you guys enough for listening. We went over the numbers. We've got a good amount of listeners, and we're just really excited about all the things that are happening for us. We mentioned, you know, the draft in June. We've got some really exciting interviews coming up. I mean, I had mentioned last week, this interview was big for us, and talking to a guy like Jack, just salt of the earth, you know, human being, phenomenal talent on the ice, but even better person off the ice. And yeah, just having fun with this whole thing, just having a blast with the hockey content, continuing to, you know, be able to go live with you guys, whether it's playing NHL, just talking playoff hockey, whatever it may be. But you guys make it all worth it. Cannot thank you guys enough. I try to do that every single episode. Thank you guys. But yes, that wraps up episode 41 of Drop the Mitts Hockey Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Davis. I cannot thank you guys enough for all that you do for us. And we will continue to bring you guys all the latest hockey content, college, pro, PWHL, whatever it may be. So again, thank you guys, and we will see you next week. Take care.